And you're welcome back to the programme. The time now, 29 minutes past the hour, and I'm joined on the line now, as usual at this time on a, Monday evening, by Liam Horan for this week's Career Corner. Good evening, Liam.
Good evening, Ed.
And as always, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Two questions this evening. Firstly, from NP by email, voluntary work, should I do it? What value does it have? My question relates to voluntary work in my community, but also voluntary work in a professional setting.
Well, there's two very different parts there. I'll deal with the first one first, voluntary work. I mean, the first thing I'd say is, you know, if you want to do voluntary work in your community, by all means, do it. Don't do it just because you should do it, you know what I mean? I mean, really, you'll only sustain anything that you're interested in terms of your hobby or sport or drama or whatever exactly rocks your boat. So, the what's behind this question, I presume, is in terms of career progression, how might it help me? And what I will say is that voluntary work in your community can be very powerful in your CV because it can say a great deal about you. But as I sort of suggested already, to do it for a token reason will probably be found out as well later on. So you need to be doing it for the right reasons, and then when you're doing it for the right reasons, using it the right way. Some time ago, not too long ago, I was at a talk at the GMIT in Castlebar where a senior recruiter from Ballina Beverages, a.k.a. Coca-Cola, spoke, and she said that one of the first things they do when they get a CV in is go to hobbies and community interests, because they get to know what kind of a person, they feel they get to know what kind of a person is applying from there. So if they've taken responsibility in their community, if they've shown motivation, discipline, that kind of stuff. So that's something they do look to. So yes, voluntary work can be very powerful on your CV. Some people leave it out completely. It does vary from career to career. But let's just take the case of somebody who's going for a teaching role. The fact that you're involved in your local choir or your local football club or something like that could be a very strong parallel. There's a very strong parallel between that and your teaching. So in that regard, it can be very good. So it's horses for courses, and it varies from case to case. But by and large, I think voluntary work is very good in your CV. So if that listener is drawn to some particular community organisation, by all means, go for it.
And in the context, in the context then of applying for a job, you said earlier it's important to use it the right way. What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, whatever your voluntary work says about you. So, say for example, you're chairperson of the committee that built the new sports field. That can say a great deal about you, about your ability to organise people, perhaps some management of budgets, your ability to perhaps submit reports for grant applications or submit grant applications. You know, whatever you did, whatever you achieved happened because you did something. And when you can take those attributes or characteristics from what you did and present them on your CV, they can be very good. So sometimes people are involved in much more significant things in their voluntary work, in their voluntary life, than they are in their professional lives, in fact, because, you know, as I said, they may have been involved in building a 500,000 euro facility in their community. So in that regard, how you present that in your CV under your section called Key Achievements, Characteristics and Attributes. And in there, you take from all parts of your life and put in strong claims about yourself that will attract the employer's attention.
And just in relation to this email from NP, voluntary work in the community, yes. Understand that, no difficulty. But voluntary work in a professional setting, what exactly might that mean?
Well, that's a horse of a very different colour. So this is somebody perhaps working, and you know, it goes on under various guises as well. I mean, Ireland is relatively new to the intern world. That's quite prevalent in America for many years, for example. Or people offer to work free of charge in perhaps in a charity shop or in other places as well, even just to get experience. So employers would tell you that in the last 7 or 8 or 9 years in this country, that people have offered to work for nothing just to get experience. Now, that can be very tricky. Obviously, you know, people might feel, well, the employer should pay you if you're going working there. That's one very important thing. But, you know, if you decide to do it, and it's a very personal decision whether you do or not, I think you need to satisfy a few things first in your own mind. One being, why am I going to work there? What do I hope to get from doing a day a week here or 3 days next month in total? What do I hope to achieve from this? Will I develop my skills? Will I get contacts? Will I have, you know, is there some light at the end of the tunnel from doing this rather than just doing it blindly? Secondly, will the organisation I volunteer with give me proper tutelage, or will they just exploit me and leave me doing the most menial task in the office because nobody else wants to do it, or the most boring task in the office, or the most complex boring task in the office, if you know what I mean. And thirdly, I think very importantly, is what's my exit strategy here? So is it going to be 3 days in total? Am I doing a day a week for the next 12 months? Am I doing a full week? When exactly am I leaving here? Because people do this, they offer to volunteer at an organisation in the hope that something will happen down the line, but they don't put a clear departure date on it, and it can get a bit messy then between the employer and this volunteer. So there are a lot of issues to consider. As I said, I wouldn't say to the listener, because it's far too complex, that they definitely should volunteer in a professional setting. But obviously they're considering it. And I would say to think about it very carefully and make sure there's real value for you in it. Because, you know, if you feel there's something you can do to further your career, by all means do it. But don't do it blindly, because it can get messy and it can leave you embittered and can actually be very counterproductive as well.
Now let's move on to Laura's email. I'm going for an interview in my own company next week. I'm currently a senior salesperson in the business, and the position of sales manager has come up. To be honest, I don't think the current incumbent has done a good job. How blunt should I be in my assessment of his performance, and should I outline ideas I have for the job during the interview?
It's actually an excellent question, because that's not an uncommon scenario that people face. You know, it's easier sometimes for somebody outside the company to come in and to promise the sun, moon and stars, because they're not going to be asked, well, why haven't you done that here the last time you're here? How come we haven't heard these brilliant ideas the time you've been here? And also, they're unencumbered by any kind of need to be respectful or deferential to the current incumbent. So this listener has got to walk a very fine line here. And I think that she must make a claim for her own candidature. There's no point going in there saying, I'll do everything the last candidate did, because the last candidate, in her opinion, hasn't done well, and that may well be the opinion of the employers as well. And even if they have done well, even if the previous person has done well, the new person should always bring something new. So, you know, they'll be watching her very closely, probably in an internal appointment, how she'll handle that situation. She needs to read the interview panel. She probably has the advantage of knowing the interview panel because she works there already. She needs to read them well enough so that they know what she's saying. That they, you know, there's often a lot of knowledge within an organisation that nearly needs not to be articulated, but certain phrases can point her in the right direction. You know, for example, I don't know the circumstances here, but it might be a phrase like greater deployment of IT in our sales support mechanisms. Maybe that's what the last person wasn't doing. So rather than questioning what they weren't doing, point what might be done in the future. So this listener has the advantage of knowing where the organisation can improve, and if they focus on that rather than where it has gone poorly, it's two sides of the same coin, and it's, you know, it's just making sure you don't get bogged down in a slagging match about the previous incumbent, and also why didn't you suggest this all along, which is a very real situation in an interview with somebody already in the company. But by focusing on the future, what she's going to bring, where she's going to bring the sales team, how she's going to develop them, that will hopefully allow her to do a good interview. As I said, somebody coming in from the outside has a huge advantage in that they can promise the sun, moon and stars, but they have a disadvantage that they don't have her knowledge. So she needs to use her knowledge very tellingly to get the best possible interview.
And of course, there's also a risk for an individual like Laura. As you say, she'll know who the interview panel is more than likely. You know, the interview panel perhaps might see a side of her, if she's overly blunt, might see a side of her that they don't particularly like.
Yeah, she's got to show that she can manage people as well. You know, she's got to be, you know, kind of measured or appropriate in her assessment of the fallen king, so to speak. So, you know, she needs to be careful. And I think the opportunity lies in the future. And what I'd say to her as well is that she needs to bring real ideas. I mean, I'm talking about promotions or, you know, it's a sales manager role. You know, physical, concrete ideas, not just aspirational kind of vague suggestions about improving this or that or the other, but actually have thought through a campaign of some sort, perhaps. So, you know, and again, she has the advantage of the knowledge. The disadvantage that you touched on there of knowing the interview panel, the reality of knowing the interview panel can be a disadvantage for somebody in-house, because sometimes they don't want to kind of stretch too much and sell themselves too much. But in an interview, you must claim that right, whether you know the panel or not. So she has a good few things to consider, but she needs to be looking to the future. What can I bring here? What ideas have I got to improve the performance? I know where the bodies are buried. I just don't need to necessarily point a flag in that direction. I can just talk about how I'm going to revive and revitalise the whole operation.
And I suppose, finally, the interview setting is not really the place for that type of conversation. This is intended to fill a position within the company. He may already be gone.
Yes, it's not an investigation. It's as you said, it's a future appointment they're making. I say to people all the time, you know, in an interview, you're auditioning for the next job, not the last job. And you know, she's going in there not as the sales manager, but she needs, when she walks in the door, to feel like the sales manager. They need to look at her and say, and in everything she says, feel that she's the person who will lead this team in the future. And when she, you know, when people get into that zone and really stop thinking about almost what I did here before or what I did in the past, as much as how I'm going to bring this on, the ideas I'm going to bring on, it can liberate people as well. Because if they focus too much on themselves and look too much into their own career and all that, it can be very sort of constricting. Or, you know, it's a bit, expressing into the future is a great way of, you know, just, in particularly in this case, drawing a discrete line between now and the future, or the past and the future.
Very good. We shall leave it at that, Liam. Thank you very much indeed, as always, for joining us on the programme, and we'll talk to you again next Monday, about the same time, 5:30.
Thank you very much, Aidan.
A very good evening to you, Liam Horan. Thank you.